Welcome to Inflection Point, interviews with women changing the status quo. Today on Inflection Point, finding yourself. One of the ways to find yourself is to visit the self-help section of your local bookstore.
What I really wanted to find was how to wake up every day and feel fulfilled and happy. And what I found was all of this wonderful wisdom that really resonated with me, but as a 20-something, I wasn't the target audience.
Finding yourself. That's our inflection point. From the time we enter kindergarten, we're asked what we want to be when we grow up. And for millennials, those born in the early 1980s to the early 2000s, as the most educated generation, the answer should be anything we want. But the reality has been a little harsher. Millennials are experiencing higher unemployment and lower wages than previous generations. And as a result of all that education, their college debt is double the average of 10 years ago. Our guests today are daughter and mother, Alexis Joyce Glamberg and Dr. Sharon Ufberg, the co-founders of the personal growth company Borrowed Wisdom, who through online resources and live events aim to help millennials figure out what and how they want to be when they grow up. Welcome to the program, Sharon and Alexis.
Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here.
So why the focus on millennials? Sharon, maybe we should start with you on that one.
I think that's a really good question. The Borrowed Wisdom concept really started before Borrowed Wisdom with a company called Elevate Gen Y, which was really the original company that did live events for millennials. And it was really based on this notion that especially women millennials were really looking for ways to make their life richer, happier, more successful, find love. And we wanted to really give them some of the solutions that we had used and when we had worked together to make that happen, especially, you know, as a mother of three millennials, I had a little something to say about that. And Alexis and I decided it really was an opportunity to share that with the world.
And Alexis, this sort of started with you, your own epiphany, right?
Right. I mean, so I was a lawyer and I was married and I wasn't happy with either of those scenarios in my life. And I ended up doing a ton of personal growth and self-help work. I read every book. I enrolled in every program and telesummit and webinar. And what I really wanted to find was how to live a meaningful life, how to wake up every day and feel fulfilled and happy. And what I found was all of this wonderful wisdom that really resonated with me. But as a 20-something, I wasn't the target audience. And so my mom and I would have conversation after conversation, my mom who turned me on to all of this personal growth work in the first place, about how much my generation really needed this. And so that was the impetus really for the business to start.
So, of course, I took a look at your website before we sat down today, and it looks like you've got a bunch of different things going on there. Can you just explain how it works from a business standpoint?
Sure. Well, Borrowed Wisdom came as a result of doing many, many live programs and where we felt like we were just scratching the surface of the people that we wanted to reach. So we really turned around the company and said, let's do this online where we can reach so many more people and do it and scale it to much, you know, to an international audience. So we started with a telesummit, which was free. It was wonderful experts. And I think Alexis and I really looked for ways in which we could begin to expand and reach many more people.
So when my mom says telesummit, she means interview series. So we interview top personal growth and wellness experts, and it's all for free, which is awesome, so that we can reach a ton of people and also give them these resources completely for free. And we've heard from our listeners that these are the things that changed their lives, because we know they do, because they changed ours too. So the telesummit's one of the biggest offerings we do. We also have a manifestation mastery course, and that's where we walk people through an 8-week, 5-step process to manifest anything they want in their life. And that's really a result of my mom and I working through a ton of resources ourselves. Again, as I said, I've done a ton of programs. My mom's done a ton of programs, read all the books, gone to all the conferences, and we figured out what really works and in what order. And so our Manifestation Mastery class is one of our most exciting programs that we offer. And my mom and I are both have a huge hand in that program.
So you mentioned, Alexis, the volume of material that you went through before you formed your own business around this idea of self-improvement. And I think that there is definitely some skepticism in the market around, you know, who's dispensing this advice? What credentials do they have? How do you really know it's going to work for you? How do I not waste my money here or my time there? What suggestions would you give to somebody who's trying to figure out, you know, where they should turn to and how they should approach their journey?
First of all, I completely understand, because when I was going through this myself, I'm a lawyer by trade, so I am naturally a little bit more skeptical and maybe untrusting. But I have to say, I think the best thing that anyone can do when approaching any kind of personal growth work is figure out whether it resonates with them. So if they're hearing something that it just strikes a chord with them, there is a reason that strikes a chord with you. And something that works for someone at a certain time may not necessarily work for another person at another time. And that's okay. And what we look to do is to find the people who feel like we're the right fit. And we found resources that really work for us. And we explain why and how they did. And I think when everyone just trusts their own kind of intuitive sense about a resource, then they're in the right place and they follow that inner knowing, that wisdom. I mean, that's the best wisdom that we all have, is the one that's inside you. So if you're listening to that voice, you're probably in the right place.
So what are some of the themes that you've heard, Sharon, as you've talked to these people all over the world who have gotten in touch with you? What are some of the things that they're telling you they're trying to work on?
Hey, you're trying to get into my book I'm writing about.
That's good. You can tease us a little with what you've come across.
I mean, I'll tell you, it's fascinating. When you embark on a new journey like this, and I was a chiropractor for 35 years, so, you know, we have, you know, really reimagined ourselves a number of times ourselves, so we're good samples of what it is to manifest the life of your dreams. And so when I talk to people, they're the big themes. People want love. People want more financial abundance. People want more freedom. People want more happiness. And I try to really hear what each and every person's dream is. And when I listen to those dreams, some of them are right at their fingertips. They want to stay in the same home they're living in. They want to stay in the same city. They want to be with the same partner. They just want maybe to have a little more financial freedom, or they want to believe in themselves a little bit more. Then maybe they want to take something that they're quite good at and turn it into their career. But often it's not a far-fetched dream. Now, occasionally, you know, I'll get the woman's who's 45 with 3 kids in a low-paying job, sitting in, you know, Kansas, not too happy with her partner, wanting to live on a boat in Tahiti, you know? That's a big dream. But for most part, the stories I hear are people that just need to be inspired and need a little bit of hand-holding to commit to what they most want and to believe in themselves.
So when you speak with them, are you helping them figure out what it is they want to manifest? And we should probably actually define what it means to manifest something as well. But I mean, are you helping them figure out what it is they want, or where do you fit into that process?
We, you know, have a very step-by-step process where we help them to figure that out for themselves.
So some people come to us and they're very clear about what they want to manifest. And by manifest, we mean actualize, create in their life. Turn into reality. And some people come and know they want something better. They're not satisfied with what is, but they don't know exactly what's next. And so we help them unpack that too. And often people think they want one thing, but they really want another. So for example, they really think they want promotion and a hotshot, you know, high level job. But what they really want is just a lot of financial abundance and time to spend with their grandkids. And so we help people unpack and unravel what it is they truly want, whether they're clear or think they're clear about that or not.
Well, it's been written about a lot that the millennial generation, you know, at large, totally generalizing, but that they have a reputation for wanting to do good in the world. And I'm just wondering if maybe the expectations that they are setting for themselves are just too high. I mean, how much good can you do in the world? I mean, how do you guide them in terms of taking care of yourself, taking care of the world?
Well, I think it all starts with, just from a very basic level, when you're happy yourself, you are emanating happy energy to all of those around you. So you're making a difference just on a micro level all day long, truly like emitting positive vibrations and frequencies out into the world. So a lot of what we do is help people figure out how to get to a place where they are moving through the world in a happy, fulfilled, passion-centered place. And then there's the level of just wanting to give back. And I think that it's wrong to say that we have too high expectations of making a difference or we're setting the bar too high for ourselves. I think what we're seeing from people of my generation is incredible innovation and a ton of creativity around solving problems that we've been born into in really awesome ways. And I think that people stretching themselves to take on those challenges is nothing short of amazing.
So, Alex, maybe this question is for you. The Pew Research Center surveyed people your age about the things that they're buying, the things that they're doing, the things that typically have signaled adulthood. And what they found is that millennials are putting off those types of things like buying a home, buying a car, having kids. Why do you think that is? Are you learning anything from the people that you talk to, your own personal experience about why that might be the case?
I think there are so many factors that play into that. I don't think that there's just one answer. I think everyone's story is really different. And in order to answer that question, we would have to honor the individuality of each person that's experiencing that. I mean, I think there's certainly like the economics of it. There's the fact that we're jumping from job to job in a way that generations before us didn't do. You did one job and you stayed at GE for 30 years and that was like your career track. Now we're spending a lot more time figuring out what we want to do in the first place and then jumping kind of from job to job. I think that we have a sense of freedom that people didn't have before to take our time, to figure things out, to wait to have babies because there's all kinds of technology now to help in the fertility department. So I think that there's a lot of different factors, but I would say I think what's most important and what my mom and I try very hard to teach people to do is to do what's right for them. Each of us is going to have a different story. You know, I'm 32 now and I have friends that own a home and have a partner and babies. And I have friends who are traveling the world and don't have a partner and don't even have a lease on an apartment. So I think everyone's story is different. It's just really a matter of figuring out what feels right to you. What do you really care about? What do you really want your life story to look like? And trust that you're following the right path if you're, again, listening to yourself and listening to what feels right at the moment, because then it'll lead you to the right place.
Well, you, Alexis, you started off, did you go straight to law school after college?
I took a year off yeah.
Okay, so you took a year off. So you actually had time to think about it.
Not really, because you have to apply to law school basically in the fall. So I pretty much knew coming out of college I was going to take a year but apply to law school. So I was pretty much on track.
Okay, so you barreled into that and then almost immediately decided it was not for you.
I did.
Could you just talk a little bit about that experience?
So, I mean, the truth is that I went to law school kind of as a default. I graduated from college and I didn't know quite what I wanted to do with my life. And so I talked to a professor about it and he was like, you should go to law school. You can do anything with a law degree, which is true. You can do anything with a law degree. You just have to get another degree or credential to do that other thing. So I went off to law school, and while it was actually a great experience, I went to Penn Law School. It's interdisciplinary. I got to take classes in all kinds of programs and make it what I wanted. I was pretty clear very early on that law was not for me. And then I got to that scary, scary place where it was like, uh-oh, now what? Now I've spent 3 years and a lot of money and a lot of time and effort doing well in law school, passing the California bar exam, and here I am kind of in the same place I was before, but with a lot of debt and a little bit older.
So let's talk about what you both bring to Borrowed Wisdom. So Sharon, your background's in chiropractic, health and wellness. I understand you also have your own radio segment on 51%.
Yes, Force of Nature.
where you get to talk to all kinds of different people about their careers and female-related topics, right?
Yeah, women who make a difference.
Thank you. That's a much, much better way of saying it. Otherwise, it sounds like something completely different. And Alexis, you study this category very intently. But so can you just talk about what kind of how you see your role in Borrowed Wisdom?
Sure. Well, you know, after 35 years in healthcare, I feel like I'm very, you know, highly equipped to hear people's stories and to listen and to, you know, diagnose, in quotes, things that are going on with them, especially because I come from like an integrative alternative side of medicine. So things, you know, had a much more open and different approach to you know, holistic healing and what that means and the whole mind-body connection. And so I come from that background and also just a background of reimagining myself many times, going from a long-term marriage to a midlife single life to living in California, then living in New York City, to being remarried again, to, you know, really doing multiple things. Alexis and I both do a lot of writing. We have a very mixed and varied career.
I mean, I think the magic of this business from the get-go is that my mom and I both just have the best intention for the business and both want to bring everything we can to it. And so initially, my mom, like my mom said, we were both doing everything. We had our hands in everything. And we have always worked together really well. As my mom said, we're both writers, and so we would both, you know, we would write up an article and then send it to the other one who would edit it. It was a very natural process before we even started a business together, and then felt very natural once we started. And as we've grown, we've created much more delineated roles within the business just based on our strengths. My mom is a killer saleswoman. She should be doing our sales. She's amazing. And so that was just a very natural outgrowth. We didn't say, Mom, you're doing sales, and I'm doing some writing for some other piece. It just kind of shook out like that. And I think we've both kind of come at it from a very organic standpoint instead of sitting, you know, with a pad and paper and figuring out you do this and I do this. It's kind of just organically evolved. And we both have a sensibility that's very, there very much allows that.
Well, what are some of the challenges that you've run into working together? Given you are related very closely, mother-daughter, you still call her mom, which
I do. We made that executive decision, actually. You know, on these business calls, a lot of father-son teams that we had talked to said that they just use first names. And we made a very conscious decision not to do that. My mom is mom. I can't call her Sharon. And we think that what's special about our relationship and our business is that we are mother-daughter, and that's we bring that to the business, and that infuses every piece of what we do. So we decided to stay true to that, and I do still call her mom. But yes, there are challenges because we are mother-daughter and best friends, and so that's going to obviously, there's going to be some conflict that comes up.
I mean, I have two other children that often, you know, we are trying to get together for a family dinner, and they're just like, no, borrowed wisdom. You know, because we're talking over and all of a sudden we remember something that we haven't mentioned, or we get an email about something, or something comes through that's exciting. So I think the challenge is keeping some division and compartmentalizing it. I think it's difficult because we are so close. I think there are days when Alexis just really wants to talk to me about her great date that she's had. And I really want to get through the to-do list, you know, or I really just want to take a day off and go meditate, you know, go to the beach. And she really has a long list of things she expects me to still finish. And so because we're related, there is a little bit more of that, you know, give and take that you might expect. You know, no one's going to fire each other. You know? We have a little safety valve there. For me as the mom, I will say that there certainly was an initial sense of responsibility. That there, you know, that even though we started as equals, I was still the mom. And so I felt very strongly that the business couldn't fail because it would be a failure on my part to help my daughter, you know, grow a business. So it was something that was very different. And I actually finally found people who were in businesses with their children to talk to about it. And then when they made it very clear, you're just always going to be the mom, you know, when it's time for the hard call, you're going to make it. And if you get clear about that and accept that, and, you know, slowly as the business grows, and it's funny, it was like at the 9-month turning point, it was like the business got birth, honestly. And I know that's maybe just feels like a very feminine example, but it was true. At about 9 months, it just all settled out and we figured it out. Yeah. So that was certainly my challenge. I'm sure Alexis had her own.
Well, I think, you know, you touched on it, Mom. Separating business and personal has been really hard because we are so close and we talk 100 times a day if we're not together working. It's, you know, we don't say this is a work call or this is a personal call. I will say my mom wakes up way earlier than I do. And she wakes up and she starts working, which is amazing. I wake up a couple hours later, and I want to, like, ease into my day. I want to call my mom and tell her about the date before I talk about anything work-related. And then I want to go on my run, and I want to meditate, and then I will start doing work. You know, and I call my mom, and she has this, like, long to-do list and long list of things that she has done and wants to tell me about. And so figuring out some boundaries around when we talk about work and when we talk about our personal lives has been a challenge, certainly. And that's just something I think we've decided is just part of the territory, and it comes with working together, and it's just something we'll have to keep navigating as we grow.
So, Alexis, you speak at women's events. You've been doing it for a few years now.
Yeah.
Can you tell us how you brought your mom into that piece of the picture?
Oh, yes. So post-law school, when I was doing a lot of personal growth work on myself, I was writing about what I was learning about in various publications. I was speaking at women's conferences. And so one of the first conferences I got asked to speak at was the Pennsylvania Conference for Women. It's like a 8,000-person conference in Philadelphia. And I was going to be speaking to a room of like 500 or something people. And this is the first time I had really spoken in public, especially about all of these personal growth topics. It was all about defining success on your own terms. So I get this speaker form, and it asks me to fill out certain mandatory fields, one of which was my assistant's name, phone number, and email. And I'm like, my assistant? Like, I don't have an assistant. But luckily, my mom has a different last name. So I put my mom's name and her phone number and email address, because I figured if anything, they'll just forward along some information to her and she'll just forward it to me. And it turned out that they sent her an invitation to the VIP speakers reception the night before the event. So, Mom, do you want to tell that story?
Yes. So, of course, Alexis is going to Philadelphia to speak, and she, you know, desperately wants me to join her. So I say, okay, this sounds great. I'll write an article about the event. You know, I'll write a story. I write for the Huffington Post. I'll write a story about this women's conference. Great. So I applied as press for the conference and I get accepted. And the next thing I know,
and now my mom is there to hold my hand when I speak in front of that room full of 500 people.
And the next thing I know, I get this invitation to the VIP reception, which I think is fabulous that they're letting press come and do some pre-interviews before the event.
And it turns out they were really just sending my assistant my invitation to the VIP speakers reception. And so my assistant got to come with me, but as press. But it was really funny. You know, of course, my mom picks up the phone and she's like, Alexis, did you tell somebody that I'm your assistant? And now we just joke about her being my assistant.
I love it. Well, let's get some advice from you too. And I'll ask you both. Sharon, what's the best advice about finding your calling that you've ever received?
The best advice about finding your calling that I received is really about taking the time to focus very clearly on your own inner wisdom. And learning the ways in which you can do that and take the time to really weigh in with yourself, opening up that channel between your heart and your mind.
What about you, Alexis?
I think that's such an important piece of it. I teach at the Barnard's Athena Leadership Center, and I talk about this very topic with college seniors. And one of the things that I have everyone do is close their eyes and imagine their ideal day. Ideal average day. So your ideal average work day. Where are you? Who are you with? Where do you wake up? How do you get to work? What are you wearing? Who's around you? Who are you working with? How do you get home? And I wish that I had someone to do this exercise with me when I had graduated from college, because I can tell you very much that I know I would not have been in high heels and a pencil skirt clickety-clacketing down the hallway of a fluorescent-lit corporate law office, sitting in an office by myself in front of a computer, looking at the clock, praying for the day to end, and then taking a bus back to my apartment in San Francisco. It just wouldn't have been my day. I wouldn't have woken up at that time. I wouldn't have got it. Like, it just, the whole thing doesn't jive. I'm in my yoga pants. I might or might not be wearing a bra. I'm sitting at my mom's kitchen table. That was a special bonus to working with my mom. But that's what I would have thought about. I would have thought about the kinds of people that I wanted to surround myself with, where I was doing that work, how my day was really crafted, what my day really looked like, and how I got to work and where I did it and who I was with. And so I think that's one of the best pieces of advice I can give anyone, and that I've gotten, to really imagine what your day looks like, just an average work day.
Well, thank you so much, Alexis Joyce Glamberg and Sharon Uffberg. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
That was Alexis Glamberg and Dr. Sharon Uffberg of Borrowed Wisdom. As part of our inflection point, Finding Yourself, listen to my interview with Abby Falick of Global Citizen Year, a nonprofit that enables high school graduates to take a bridge year before college.
This is not a year about going out to do good. It's a year fundamentally about re-envisioning yourself and figuring out what role you want to play over the course of your lifetime and really making a dent.
That's our inflection point for today. Is there a woman changing the status quo you'd like to hear from? Let us know at inflectionpointradio.org. While you're there, listen to previous shows and sign up for our email updates. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/inflectionpointradio. Follow us and follow me on Twitter at L.A. Schiller. Inflection Point is produced at the studios of KALW Radio in San Francisco and delivered to public radio stations nationwide through PRX. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. I'm your host, Lauren Schiller.